You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 455. We've been gone for many, many weeks, and we return to find the Punk News Podcast overturned, rubble everywhere. Someone's been through our stuff, doors left ajar. It's just a fucking disaster, but we're going to try. Here we go. Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the show tonight, Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia. Hey, John.
Emerging from the wreckage. Adam, we just have to take it one day at a time and put it back together. One day at a time.
Well, if anyone's going to help us with this, it's our own personal insurance adjuster, Mr. Tom Trauma.
Wow, I've been called many things, Adam, but I don't believe I've ever been called an insurance adjuster.
Well,
I've been called the master disaster. I've been called, I don't know, lots of things.
It could be a vaguely threatening name, like if you started walking down the street and everyone's like, you know, hushed in their like hushed tones, like, oh, no, that's the insurance adjuster.
The attitude adjuster.
That would have been more threatening if you didn't vocally cut out when you said whatever you said. But I'm sure it was super dramatic.
Stupid technology.
The listeners are just fucking terrified. Okay, so this is
the make me come over there.
Yeah. Because he will adjust your claim, man.
Don't make me stop this car. Come back there.
How many weird metaphors can we mix and pack into this hour? Okay, so we've not been here for a few weeks. Now, if you, the Punk News Podcast listener, are listening to this, you are saying, hey, this is 455. Where's 454? Well, the answer is I wasn't here for that one, and John and Tom recorded it, and I've been told on good authority that it is a classic. But but it's not ready yet, so it'll come out in a few days. But this one is full of our hot opinions on recent happenings. So we just had to kind of get it out there. So I hope whatever you guys recorded last week was utterly timeless and doesn't could be listened to.
Everything we record is timeless.
Yeah, like you could just put 454 put it on ice and listen to it in 10 years maybe on the eve of your daughter's wedding or something. I don't want to tell you what to do, listener, but there's all sorts of things that you could use that episode for whenever it comes out. But we're here now.
Adam, what's interesting, in certain parts of Eastern Europe, the Punk News Podcast is often used as romantic music, believe it or not.
I would believe it. It's Eastern Europe, right? So we're going to talk about been.
Pull that somebody special close and prepare to be razzle dazzled for the next hour.
All right. So where have we been? When we last left off, at least according to my research, I was making stupid Star Trek jokes. And then we all got busy, or at least I got busy and made everything inconvenient for everyone. So, John, I feel like we'll recap everyone on where we've been, and then we'll maybe get into some tales about some of the happenings, some of the things that went on there. So I, Adam, I've been to two different music festivals over the past two weekends, which is a rare thing for me to do because it involves a fair amount of family abandonment. But I was up in Ottawa for Side by Side weekend, and then the next weekend I was in Sackville, New Brunswick for Sappy Fest, and that is where I have now returned from. Returned yesterday. John, what would you have going on? You had a little thing, right?
Adam, I moved 100 miles. I threw the summer soiree too. I started a new job. And I had an insurance adjuster come look at my house. How about that?
Oh, look at that.
All you need is an attitude adjustment now, John. And you'd be all set.
That's true.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to figure out where you are here. So if I search for 100 miles from Philadelphia.
It's like an Altoona or somewhere.
I'm going to place you. Oh, look. There's a website called Cities 100 Miles from Philadelphia. I shit you not. All right, so John has moved to which of these places sounds the most fun for me?
A remote island off the coast of the Atlantic.
Okay, hold on. I get three guesses here. John, are you living in Grantville?
No.
All right. John, are you living in which one's fun? Hasbrook Heights.
No.
Fuck. All right. Gonna get one more here. John, do you need to move the? Are you living in East Rutherford?
No, because Adam, your game is based on a faulty premise. I moved 100 miles closer to Philadelphia rather than away from Philadelphia.
This really blows my whole conception of how big.
That must have been
you were living in there. You moved from your earlier home, which 100 miles out of Philadelphia would have been Pocono Lake.
Yes. You mean the Poconos? What'd you call it? The Pocono? No, the Poconos?
I've had a few romantic dates in the Poconos.
It's Pocono. Okay, Pocono Lake. There you go. I don't know. I don't say these things. The only time I've ever heard the word Poconos ever is on Seinfeld. That's the only reason I know that place exists. And clearly, I've never seen it spelt.
The Poconos is a famous skiing area and camping vacation spot.
Honeymoon area.
That's true, too.
I mean, at least in the 50s.
And bachelor parties, too.
Well, whatever. I don't care where you're living now. So anyways.
John wanted to move somewhere where there was constant bachelor parties. I remember him saying to me one time, he's like, man, wouldn't that be sweet to live somewhere where there was a bachelor party every weekend?
So
we should do a podcast episode sometime where it's just lame bachelor party stories. Because I'll tell you, I've been to some lame ones. Adam, go ahead.
I've been to some lame ones and I've been to some felonious ones. So,
that can be your next episode. But I'm not here because I have nothing interesting to contribute there. That requires you to have friends. So let's talk a little bit about we haven't mentioned where Tom's been. Tom, what crazy shit have you been up to? Don't get into the whole story. Just give people a little teaser.
I got to tell you, man, I'm afraid my life has not been as exciting as you young fellows.
Wow.
I've mostly been soaking up the domestic tranquility.
Tom, that sounds amazing. John, talk about your interesting thing first.
Oh, you want to tell the whole story?
Well, yeah. Look, we don't really have a plan for this week. There's not too much interesting in the news. So we can do that. Or should we do some mail first? What do you want to do? We're kind of running without a plan.
Let's do a little bit of mail.
Okay,
Neil, and as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. And so I'm going to reach into the mailbag right now and read this great letter from Liverpool Neil. And here we go. This is from Liverpool Neil, who writes in pretty frequently, and we're always glad to get his letter. So once again, that's podcast at punknews.org. And here's what Liverpool Neil has to say.
John, have you been drinking?
Hello, Jack.
You joining Adam and I in the fraternity of people drinking at the pod?
I've been drinking Coca-Cola. Hello, chaps. Liverpool Neil here. A couple of episodes ago, a listener wrote in asking why someone would spend more money buying a foreign pressing rather than a domestic one. Adam kind of answered the question, but there's more to it than just being a collector and needing to have everything. First, the example the listener gave was a terrible one. The first Clash album. The U.S. pressing of the first Clash album is an abomination. It has a completely different track listing than the U.K. one, omitting four songs and adding others that had no right to be on the album in the first place. The album was mostly written in 1976 and it was released in 1977. The songs were all written at the same time and had similar sounding, pacing, and structure. The album is perfect, but the powers that be decided that USA wasn't ready for it and it wasn't released until 1979, and they replaced Deny, Cheat, 48 Hours, and Protex Blue with Clash City Rockers, Jail Guitar, Doors, White Man, and Hammersmith Palace, and I Fought the Law. Great songs, but from a completely different time and period in the Clash's career. So if you want the real first album of the Clash, you have to get the UK pressing, not the American. So yeah, different track different track listings on U.S. pressings is one thing, but then you also get different masterings released in different countries. For example, it's widely known that the best-sounding version of the Heartbreakers LAMF album is the French pressing. The U.K. one is muddy and flat, while the French one is much more vibrant. Same goes for the First Generation X album. The Japanese pressing is widely known to sound the best. As for reissued and repressed albums, some countries put out reissue albums sourced from the original masters, where a lot of American reissues are merely presses of the CD mix. They sound terrible when compared to the original vinyl or vinyl sourced from the original masters. The Haunted Town reissues of the Naked Ray Gun catalog is a perfect example here. As for collectors needing every foreign press of every recording from a band, well, that might be true, but more importantly, the foreign releases might feature different sleeve art. This was especially true of the early punk 45s. French, German, and Japanese releases of the early punk singles were almost always had different sleeves in the UK versions, and most of the time the art was far superior. Collecting those is fun but expensive. As an example, here's the First Generation X single, and it includes the different Generation X single covers, which are very different. Finally, the Japanese pressings of some albums often feature one or two extra tracks. They did this with all the early Social Distortion albums. Plus, you get that killer OBI strip down the left-hand side. And sometimes you get a lyric sheet with hilariously misheard or poorly translated lyrics. I remember seeing one from the First Ramones album, and the lyrics couldn't have been more wrong. Okay, enough yapping from me. Stay free from Liverpool, Neil.
I am a huge fan of the Obi strip. It is neat. I don't know what exactly its purpose is, to tell you the truth. Like if it has a functional thing that it's for, but anytime I encounter one, it strikes me as a cool little affectation to give a release. And I actually saw, cause I was looking at some options from a pressing plant for some Secret Atom projects. And like, you can totally just buy them and put them on your releases. You know, even if they're not in Japan, seems like a waste of money in a way, but they're cool. I like them.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It is a little, it's a little piece of paper that is wrapped around the spine of a, of like a Japanese released like CD, DVD, movie, record. I've seen them on tapes and stuff like that. Well, yeah, but if you're a super nerd, you can like slide it off because it'll actually have some text written on it and
keep it in your
I don't know where you keep it. I don't know where people keep their pants, Obi strips. Yeah. I don't want to tell people where to keep their Obi strips, Tom.
You keep it on the record. I mean, if it's on the record, it's just on the record. If it's the CD, you put it on the inside of the CD case. This is not rocket science, guys.
Well, I mean, if you're going to use it, if you're going to use it for sexual purposes, I'm not going to judge you, is what I'm saying, John.
I'm trying to think how you use an OBC for sexual purposes.
I don't know, but whatever it is, I'm not judging.
Give me 10 minutes.
So anyways, yeah, I can't disagree with anything Neil said there, especially the part where he more or less agreed with me. That's what I want. You got anything else, John?
You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your letters.
We do. Okay, so I'm going to presume that both you, John Gentile, and me, who's me, are going to play some piece of music that is related to the thing that we're going to talk about. Is that true?
That's true.
So, Tom, since you have you've just made the point that you live a boring life that brings you no joy.
Not always. I just have recently.
Right. So do you want the first song slot here?
I mean, the one I just accidentally started playing while I was trying to email it to you?
I didn't hear it, so no one knew about that, but now they do.
Do you hear it or no?
No.
Where is it? Oh, it's playing in my headphones through my computer.
Go away. Technology is magic. Do you want the slot?
I was trying. No, you better go ahead because I got to figure out how to stop playing this song.
I feel like we need like a computer Sherpa that can sit there with Tom and help him figure out what he's doing. All right. Well,
I'm looking at it right now. Why is it playing through my headphones and not playing? And you guys can't hear it. Oh, it's only a 2-minute song. It'll end soon.
You're just going to let it go. Well, Tom, tell us about the song. What is this song that I'm actually going to play it now. I'll slot it in at the right time. Well, what is it? What are you going to play?
What I was hoping to play was this song by Childbite. It's called The Creeper. It's a brand new song they just recorded. They're doing a split with Child Bide's a great Detroit band. They're kind of a noisy, I hesitate to call them punk, but there's definitely some punk in there. It's punk and metal and noise and just sometimes just absolute bizarreness. And they're doing a split with Ringworm out of Cleveland, I believe. I know they're out of Ohio somewhere, but Ringworm.
Cleveland, Ringworm's famous Cleavecore band.
Well, I feel like they moved to Columbus or something after that. But anyway, yeah, they start out in Cleveland. But anyway, they're doing a Ringworm and Child Bite are doing a split, and I have every intention of sending you a Child Bite track called "The Creeper," so you can all see how weird it is for yourself. So this is Child Bite, "The Creeper."
Child Bite. John, you had a shindig. I wasn't there this time to keep it all on the rails. So, would you say it is a flaming disaster or just more of a smoldering, death pit?
It was a magical evening. I've got to say, this was the 10th show that I've thrown, and Adam, I think you would agree. Summer Swarm.
Is it the 10th one already?
10th show that I've thrown.
Was the one Adam was at? Was that the first one?
No, there's been three soirees. I've thrown 10 shows.
Okay.
So Adam, you were at Summer Soiree 1, and I think you would agree that was a magical evening, would you not?
It was magical in that we somehow pulled it off.
And it was magical in that it was an excellent time. Everyone had a great time, and the bands were fantastic.
Well, yeah, also that, but we also somehow pulled it off.
Well, that was amazing, too. So I've thrown other shows, and we've thrown a lot of killer shows through Punk Boost. Stizzycrack and Joe Jack Talcum. The Spring Slam Down with Crazy in the Brains and Drew Getz and Up Up Ups and Jade. We've thrown Dan Burn of Chumbawamba. So we've definitely thrown some amazing, amazing shows at Punk News and in Philadelphia specifically. But Summer Soiree 3 it was a magical, magical evening. This one had a lot of themes and kind of like hidden themes to it. But the idea was is that for some reason, I thought Night at Bald Mountain would be a fitting theme. And so doorman to the stars, KB Vickers, was running the door. And the show opened up, actually. I had a Cirque du Soleil performer come and do a contortion thing and a sword swallowing thing. And that kind of opened the show. And no one knew that was happening. That kind of blew people's minds. And then I started with Night at Bald Mountain. And then I came up and started yelling at people about, like, yelling, like, hyping the crowd. And then I ran through a banner that said Soiree and into the crowd. And it was at Philomoka, which we've thrown at before. Philomoka is a really cool venue. It's got a balcony, which was a problem at Summer Soiree 1. And I was concerned that we were going to have jumpers again, even though I did a World Inferno show there about 6 months ago, and we didn't have any jumpers. For some reason, in the heat, people get kind of goofy. And so I was worried there was going to be jumpers because the show was sold out. And when there's a lot of people in a room, people tend to get goofy. But, man, everybody was cool. We had no problems at all. Everybody was cool. So I ran through the banner into the crowd, and then Trash Knife came out, and they just tore it up. Trash Knife is a Philadelphia, I call them party punk band, just like a straight up wild punk band. They were crazy. After that, I had Street Vengeance play. Street Vengeance is the new band featuring Chip of Pure Hell. Pure Hell is first wave punk rock. They actually started doing music before punk rock even existed. They kind of merged into punk rock in about 1976. If you have never checked out Pure Hell, you should check out Pure Hell. And Chip is the guitar player. And so he's got a new band called Street Vengeance. And he actually had a band in the 90s called Street Vengeance, but this is a different Street Vengeance. And they just ripped through about 25 minutes of like just straight up blues punk. And it was awesome. Between that, I raised money for St. Jude's Children's Hospital, courtesy of Since Been Records, who donated a couple of things. So that was cool. And then after that, Joe Jack Talcum came up. And I didn't even really know like what Joe Jack Talcum was going to do. Because with Joe Jack, as I said before, Joe Jack is the nicest guy. Like, he is the man. He's so nice, but he's very quiet, gentle, and shy. And so if you ask Joe to do something, I suspect that if you ask Joe to do something and he doesn't want to do it, he'll do it, but he won't be happy about it. But he won't even express that he's not happy about it. He'll just kind of do it and just keep his unhappiness into his core. And so I always want to keep Joe Jack as happy as I can. And it can be tough to gauge how happy Joe Jack is, because he's very steady, and that like he always has the same low key attitude, and he never seems to be off stage. He never seems to be excited or unhappy or happy or sad. He's just Joe Jack Talcum. And so I always make it a point to say, okay, Joe, we got this, we got that. You know, is this cool? Is that cool? Do you want this? Do you want that? And he's like, that's fine. That's fine. And I can never tell if Joe Jack Talcum is putting up with me or if he's having a good time. I still don't know. So I didn't know what kind of performance he was going to do. Cause I sent him an email. I said, Joe, you want to do the show? This is like 4 months ago. And he was like, yes, but I might bring some friends with me to perform. And I didn't want to say, okay, well, who's that going to be? Because I didn't want to like squeeze him. You know, I just said, Joe, whatever you want to do, that's fine with me. But then like about a week before, when I need to make the handouts, I'm like, Joe, can you let me know who you're going to be playing with so we can get the stage all ready and everything? And so he told me that it was going to be Dan Jomar, which is his solo electric band. Dan Stevens of the Dead Milkmen, Joe Jack Talcum of the Dead Milkmen, and Marshall Fisher, the drummer, a drummer. And so they got up on stage and they did a 45-minute set, all electric, deep, deep, deep cuts. He actually played one of the earliest ever Dead Milkmen songs that's not even on the first album. He did a bunch of his solo stuff, electric full band. He did a couple of Dead Milkmen mega hits like Dean's Dream. But for the most part, it was like super rarities. And it was, man, like some artists just have like a not a majesty, just like a certain element of just like soul to them. And I don't mean that like Joe Jack sings like Aretha Franklin. But like when he sings and does music, it's like so special. No one sounds like him. And even though a lot of his songs have very weird lyrics, he's able to communicate kind of a feeling that everyone understands, even though he's like using these weird lyrics or these things. And honestly, like I really want to do a profile of Joe Jack Talcum, because like if you read his lyrics are personal, and I don't know that they are, but I'm assuming that they are. It's like if you really read his lyrics, you kind of really realize what kind of person he is. I mean, in a good way, I mean, and what a sensitive kind of person he is. And I think he's misunderstood. The point being, though, it was without question the best time I've seen Joe Jack outside of the Dead Milkmen, and it was really good. And after the show, I'm like, "Oh, Joe, thanks, man, that was so awesome. You're the man. You're the greatest." And he's like, "Thanks for having me." And then I like emailed him later. I'm like, "Joe, thanks for playing all those rare cuts. That was great. Was that a low budget song you played?" And his response was, "Thanks for having me. That was a low budget song. Thanks for a great soiree." And that's all he says. And I don't know if he was like happy or I can never tell. I always get the impression that he's annoyed, but that might just be me projecting, because he's not like, "Yeah, John, that was awesome. You're the man." I don't know. Joe Jack will forever be a mystery. And maybe that's the best thing. And then after him, the other co-headliner was a band called World Inferno Friendship Society. Have you guys heard of that band before, World Inferno Friendship Society, or?
I think I've heard you mention them.
And so
once or twice, John, once or twice.
World Inferno came. I mean, they came to do battle. I mean, World Inferno's got a mostly new lineup. They rebooted their lineup about a year ago or 8 months ago. And I really enjoy the fact that World Inferno like changed their lineup a lot. And I think it gives them like different sounds, different styles. So they came out, and to my great surprise, they did a 90-minute set, all greatest hits, strictly greatest hits. And I was loving it. I mean, I like the rare tracks, but for tonight, the Summer Soiree 3, it was, you know, Cats Are Not Lucky Creatures, Brother of Mayor Bridgewater, Tattoos Fade, Anarchy, Zen and the Art of Breaking Everything in This Room, You're a Younger Man, Only Anarchists Are Pretty, and it was just like mega hit after mega hit, and they sounded so amazingly good, and the crowd was so into it, and it was either the best time or second best time I've ever seen them on drums with John Lango of Crazy in the Brains filling in on drums, and it was a magical evening. And then afterwards, me and KB Vickers, my doorman, we handed out goodie bags, and included in goodie bags were four things. One, a coupon to Sit and Spin Records. Two, a thing that says you should go buy records from Alternative Tentacles, which you should. Three, a record as chosen by moi. And four, the exclusive Punk News Summer Soiree tabletop action game that you can only get by going to Summer Soiree 3, which is now over, and then it will never be reprinted. And it is a full Dungeons & Dragons type game where you can be Jack Terrycloth, Joe Jack Talcum. You can be any member of Trash Knife. You can be anybody in any of the bands that played, and you get to go through a dungeon and kill monsters, including trolls, buzzkill bots, hooligans, and even Nazis. And people dug the game, and it was a thrilling, successful evening. And I don't know how I'm going to top it, so I'm putting up concerts on a hold for a little while, at least through the fall, maybe a little bit after that. Because, I mean, the idea was to do two or three shows a year. I did six this year, so I want to pull back. And I don't know if I'll not do a show again. I probably will, but it's nice to cap it off number 10 at this wildly successful, magical, special evening that I think everyone shared and really enjoyed and really meant something to a degree. So that was Summer Soiree 3, and it was awesome.
I'm glad to hear it went well, John. Full house?
Full house. Sold out, baby. Sold Excellent. Out.
That's so nice to hear that it all, you know, came together well, actually, again.
That's part, you know, I've done 10 shows now, and add a part of the thrill, and you'll test this, of Summer Soiree 1, is we had no idea what we were doing, and so, like it could have become a complete disaster and fallen into shambles, and to a degree, now that excitement is gone, it might be a little bit less fun from that angle, you know what I mean? Like, I know what's going to happen now, you know, I know problems that might arise, I know how to move tickets, you know, and so the element of danger is kind of gone, if you will.
Yeah, and it's nice and fitting that it went back to where it started, right? It was another show at Philomoka.
Yeah.
You know, recapture some of that original and you know, World Inferno came back for it again. Like the whole thing seems fitting. So yeah, maybe I would not suggest that you take a overly extended break from this because I mean, dare I say you seem to be pretty good at it. But you don't want to, you know, you want it to be special for you. You don't just want to be like, you know, well, I'm a promoter now, and you just you know, promote like.
Nah, because if you do that, then you have to become sleazy and rip off bands and whatnot. But I think John eventually will miss the thrill that goes with the fear of losing a couple $1,000 waiting for people to buy tickets.
I will not besmirch our lovely promoters who. You know, because if they weren't doing it, I don't know what I would do. But
listen, two quick things. Now that the event was a wild success and did sell out, I got one first thing I got to add. Man, I'll tell you, 2018, I had no problem selling tickets, no problem. 2019, I had to hustle. Do you guys have any prognostication as to why, or that's not the right word? Do you have any idea of why it's been so much harder to sell tickets in 2019 and 2018? Because I've talked to some other people and they've sort of experienced that as well. Like, man, I had to hustle to move tickets this year, you know?
Fortnite, right?
I'm gonna guess because America's great again.
It could be. Check this out. So I've spoken vaguely about this on the podcast before. You guys know there's that promoter in New York that like rips off my bills and even rips off my art, and it really pisses me off.
Yep. I don't know. Have we talked about the pod or have we talked about that privately?
Well, I'll talk about it on the pod now. So anyways, there's a promoter. Oh, that's right. We did talk about it. I didn't say where it was. I just said where it was. Well, I don't care. There's a promoter somewhere.
Upstate New York. New York.
There's a promoter that literally looks at my build. No one had ever done Joe Jack Talcum and Scissor Crack before. No one had ever done Scissor Crack Back by Crazy in the Brains before. And lo and behold, there's another promoter that is like taking my unique combinations and just duplicating them. And I don't own these bands, so maybe it's not fair for me to say, oh, you ripped off my bill. But I don't know. It feels like it is kind of unfair. And people tend to agree with me. I'm still on the fence myself. But also, he ripped off some of my art.
Take it as a compliment, John, because –
We did talk about that. He's stealing my money, essentially. You know, but is it my money? I don't know.
Are you looking to move to New York, John? You going to go Muslim?
I'm going to Muslim out of New York. But he has ripped off my cover art, at least I think so, which I think is lame. But anyway, check this out, and I'm really going to blow my cover here. So he recently fired his number one boy, right? Like his number one man, like his go-to man, you know? For some reason, his go-to man was hanging down at Summer Soiree 3. And I don't know if you guys are like this or not. I'm definitely like this. Have you ever like met someone and you're like, oh my God, I hate this person. Or not hate them, but this person annoys me so much. I've only known them for like 10 seconds. Do you guys have that? Or maybe you guys don't have that.
I get it all the time, but I bet you Adam has it because he lives in Canada and everyone's just pleasant all the time.
Yeah. So man, I meet this dude. I'm like, oh my God, I can't stand this guy. And then lo and behold, it's my ripoff guy's former number one guy who he fired or he quit. Who knows? So this guy's kind of.
Did he try to come work for you? He's like, you're the guy now. You're the only way I can move the ladder is if I come work for you.
It's like in the mafia, like when one of the dons gets killed, like his foot soldiers try to go join other dons.
Exactly.
Except for I'm not a don, I'm just some bum.
Well, you really have blown a lot of your cover today, John. Yeah, now we all know that you're made man.
Yeah. So anyways, so this guy, I mean, he's just doing something that's like annoying me. Like World Inferno didn't have a merch person because their other merch person like had to leave. So he says, oh, can we get someone to sell stuff for World Inferno? And I'm like, what do you mean we? You're not World. Who are you? You know what I mean? And so I Ginger Knight of the Jugettes was nice enough to sell merch for World Inferno. And I'm thinking, well, if this guy's hanging out with World Inferno, why can't he sell merch? Like, he's walking around like he owns the place. I'm like, who is this jackass? You know? And then later on, he says, somebody said to me that you're worried about Jack Terrycloth getting on the stage, but I'm going to tell you a secret. If you put a bottle of wine on the stage, he'll come get the bottle. I'm like, shut up. Like I know Jack Terrycloth better than you do. I know he's good. I know he's not gonna not come on stage. Like, he lives for that. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? But anyway, here's the kicker. So anyways, it's Summer Soiree 3. Everyone's having a great time, and it wouldn't be a John Gentile event if there wasn't at least one minor thing that nagged me. You know what I mean? The whole time. And so anyways, everyone's having a great time. Everybody's got the globe bracelets that I hand out. Everyone's, you know, we hand out globe bracelets, slap bracelets. We hand out Mardi Gras beads, Lays. Everyone's having a great time. I handed out cowboy hats. Everyone's having a great time, right? And Adam, when at Summer Soiree 1, what was maybe the main or second main problem that we had?
Someone jumping off a ledge?
that guy was there too. And check this out. I can't believe that guy showed up. But my main man, doorman, KB Vickers, said, I didn't even know this. KB told me afterwards. He said, I said to him, if you jump off, you are out and you're never coming back. And the guy didn't jump off. Anyway,
so outside of jump guy, what was our main problem?
People throwing shit at the screen, remember?
No, I don't remember that.
Oh, man. Well, because at Summer Soiree 1, the guy that runs Philomogo, who's the man, Eric B., he's like, yo, he's like, people aren't going to throw stuff, are they? And I was like, no, why would people throw stuff? What are you talking about? And then sort of people started throwing globe bracelets. I was like, oh, my God. So anyways, at Summer Soiree 3, 100% of the paid audience is being cool as hell. They're having a good time. They're being a little rowdy, but like respectably rowdy. They're just having a good time. They're dancing, right? So this jerk off, this guy, he takes a globe bracelet and he throws it. And I'm like, I'm thinking, you idiot, you're a promoter. You know you don't want people throwing stuff. So I said, yo. And he looks at me, he smiles, like, you see what I did? And he's going to throw another. I'm like, don't you dare throw that. I'm like, but, like, this guy's goofy. Like, what's up with people? Like, he's thrown shows. He knows you don't want to encourage people to throw stuff at concerts. And he's throwing shit at my concert. Dude.
So, John, did this resolve itself or did it just fizzle out?
I kind of scared him and it kind of fizzled out. I'm like, don't throw stuff. You know, like, why would you? How rude is it to go to someone else's concert where you're getting in for free and you're throwing stuff? And you've thrown, like, it'd be one thing, like, people that go to, like, you know, big arena shows, people throw, like, you know, like cups and stuff, which is lame. But so if someone didn't know, has never thrown a concert, they might think it's funny or cool to throw stuff. But if you've thrown a concert like this guy has, you know it's not cool to throw stuff. You know that's a real problem, you know?
Yeah.
Man. I don't even know if the guy was malicious. I think he was just goofy. Anyways,
There's only one thing you could do, John. Go to one of his shows and rip a sink out of the bathroom wall. That's the only way to get your revenge.
The point being is I've definitely done more shows this year, and I definitely have had just encountered the periphery, not directly, but the periphery of other. I'm not trying to start anything, but like I don't feel I'm cutting anybody's business. You know what I mean? Especially because I'm not making any money. But I've had vague instances of other people kind of doing some shady stuff, which I really didn't like, and it's not fun at all. You know what I mean?
Man, people invade your turf. You need to strike hard and strike fast.
Well, you're right.
They send one of yours to the hospital. You send two of theirs to the morgue.
I actually was going to strike back at a guy who pulled some really funny business at Chumbawamba. But I didn't want to get back at him before SummerSlam 3, because once I snap on him, then he's going to go to cry to everybody and it'll cause me more problems. And I didn't want any problems for SummerSlam 3. But at this point, it's been 2 months and it's like, well, I'll just tell what people did. And you guys, I mean, I'm not trying to make this the John episode. So for Stizza and Dan Burt, right, this dude that I know, and I mean, I've always been friendly to him. So the reason Dan Burt did an East Coast tour is because John said, Dan Burt, if you come to Philadelphia, I'll figure out how to get you paid and we work something out. You know what I mean? And so then he did like five other East Coast dates and it was awesome, right? And so this dude in Philadelphia reaches out to Dan Burt and says, yo, Dan, and this is Dan Burt's first Philadelphia show in like 9 years, right? And so this dude reaches out and says, yo, Dan Burt, you should come on my radio show. And Dan Burt's like, yeah, that's awesome. I'll do that. And then I'm thinking, oh, we'll call the guy Bill. His name's not Bill. I'm like, oh, man, Bill, thanks for doing that. That's awesome. I really appreciate that. Because Dan Burt on the radio helps me out to a degree at least, right? And so he goes on Bill's radio show. And after the radio show's over, Bill says to him, yo, Dan Burt, I know you're playing Philadelphia on Friday, but why don't you come play this cafe show on Thursday and we'll just give you the door. We don't have a guarantee for you, but we'll just give you the door on Thursday, the night before your other show in the same town. So – I mean, that's BS, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's whack. And so Dan Burt's the man. He emails me. He's like, well, do you mind if I do this? And that kind of puts me in the awkward position. It's like, well, I kind of do. Not against you, but, you know, I put money up for this. I'm trying to make this a big, cool event. And if that happens, then that kind of steals my thunder because it's your first show in 9 years or 10 years, you know? And so he was cool and he didn't do it. And I made sure he got taken care of. But it's like, so I was like really mad at that guy. And I'm like, I'm going to get this guy. I mean, I would never hit anybody. I mean, because like, I'm not an idiot. And I know if I hit him, he's going to cry and sue me. But what I was going to do was like, kind of like just scare him. Because I mean, I know this guy, he's a little, you know, little chump. And so if I had a talking to him, he would probably cry. Because apparently he did this like 10 years ago. And some guy almost did hit him and he cried. So I was going to make him cry. But like it's like I'm like I'm not gonna do before SummerSlam 3 because that'll cause me problems because he'll go run and tell all his friends and then there'll be all these things on Facebook about how John's makes places unsafe, you know. And then so I'm like, I'll get him after SummerSlam, and that's when I'll get him. But at this point it's been 2 months and like, do I need the headache? You know what I mean? So whatever.
John, you shouldn't make people cry, but yeah, that's pretty pretty weak.
Living well is the best revenge, John.
But it is
fun to make somebody wet their pants too.
I mean, revenge is a better revenge, but living well is okay too.
And of course, that guy, he's Mr. Punk Rock. He quote always supports the scene. Of course, he never pays to get into a gig, but he supports the scene. You know what I mean? Anyways, the point. I shouldn't let that detract. Listen, Danbert and SZA was amazing. SummerSlam 83 was mega amazing. And I'm still on cloud nine from this show. It really was amazing. And I've got an idea of how to top it next year, and we'll see if it happens. So I don't know, man. Maybe a show this Christmas time. Maybe a show in the spring. SummerSlam 84 coming at you. Summer 2020.
Well, there you go. You've unretired yourself.
A reason to live another year. To drag our corpses through another 365 days on this mortal coil.
And maybe Tom will actually come out for this one.
I know. One of these years, John. One of these years.
Cats in the cradle, the silver spoon. Exactly.
John, I let your best years slip away.
So, yeah, I'll play a song.
Listen, if I come out, John, we're going to go get these other promoters, and we're going to get some short lengths of lead pipe, and we're going to take care of this, and you won't have to worry about it ever again.
Well,
you will be the top one. You'll be number one, number two, number three, number four, and number five promoter in Philadelphia by the time we're done.
Well, actually, I'm not going to talk about this on the podcast, but both Adam and Tom know the other situation I had with regards to a different concert, which was like a real, real situation. So there's that situation.
Could have used some lead pipes then. All right, John, play a song.
Let's play some World Inferno because they're the greatest. This is should I play a positive song? Yeah, let's play a classic. This is Zanon, The Art of Breaking Everything in the Room, off the remastered version of Just the Best Party, an excellent remaster that I need to review. World Inferno is the greatest new album out in Alternative Tentacles in 2019. Late.
Back, that was World Inferno Friendship Society. So that was where John's that's how John spent his summer vacation. I don't have anything as particularly dramatic, and this is going to sound all very very calm and zen, I think, compared to John levels of pumped up craziness. So I apologize if anyone wants to just go to have a little nap or something. I guess you can do so. But yeah, I went to two music festivals and both of them were wonderful. And I hope I can continue to attend both of them well into the future because wow, it just it makes me appreciate the community that exists around some of these little bands. In particular, how there were just like repeat characters from one of these events to the other of the events, and they are geographically not necessarily close to each other. But that's just sort of fact of life in Canada, is that nothing is particularly close to each other. So if you're going to be involved in something, you know, as small as, say, like the independent music community, you just kind of have to, you know, make do and do some crazy traveling and things like that. So the first show that, or the first one that I went to, which is 2 weeks ago, was something called Side by Side Weekend, which was in Ottawa. It was the first of these events to happen. And it is really the successor event, or one of the successor events to the Ottawa Explosion, which was a much beloved kind of music festival that, that I'd attended like the last 2 years of, but had a, you know, 5 or 6 year history even before that. And like, so Ottawa, no one has ever been to Ottawa. It is the capital of Canada. It's where our parliament is. It is a town that I very much like as far as kind of big cities in Canada go. It pleases me to visit it more than, say, Toronto. And, I look for excuses to go there, and music festivals are always sort of like a nice excuse. So Side by Side took place at, I think purposefully sort of a small scale this first year. So it was at two venues that are right next to each other for the most part. Black Squirrel Books, which is this kind of like hip bookstore that is licensed to sell beer, and they make espresso and stuff like that. And at night they just sort of like pull a bunch of the tables full of, you know, product out of the way, and bands set up and play like amongst the bookshelves. And I have no idea if playing amongst, you know, 500 stacked books does anything interesting acoustically, but it looks cool. And right next to that is House of Targ, which is, I feel like Americans should know about House of Targ by this point because Canadian bands keep promoting it everywhere they go. So if you saw Pup play on, I don't know what the fuck they were on, Conan or Kimmel or whoever is the talk show host du jour, or if you saw Pew 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 play when they were on Seth Meyers, there was someone wearing a House of Targ t-shirt, I think, in both of those performances. So this is it is a downstairs venue that is a arcade, and they are also strangely a gourmet pierogi restaurant. And
what kind of games they got, Adam, in the arcade?
It's all classic stuff. So there's like a big, there's a big wall of pinball machines down the one side. And then there's like video game machines everywhere else. But there's nothing that's in there that I think is older than, say, like 1995. Like, as far as any of the video games are, it's all old stuff, which is great and super fun. And
it's Tapper. You know Tapper, Adam?
Tapper. I don't know Tapper.
Tom, you know Tapper?
I don't. Donkey Kong was my game. What about you?
Tapper is probably the best game ever. And Tapper, you're Mario, but you're bootleg Mario. Tapper is a game developed by Budweiser, and you have to pour out beer and slide them down the. You have to pour out Budweiser and slide them down the the bar to the angry customers to make them happy. Go ahead, Tom. Adam, I'm sorry.
Love that. I might have liked that more than Donkey Kong, but we didn't have it.
I need to find it now. But anyways, yeah, I mean, Targ is cool also because the stage is just basically the floor at one point. It is technically a raised stage, but it is raised by 6 inches from sort of the rest of the floor that is not the stage. So you're basically playing with like whoever you're seeing there right in your face, which is great. So they had this scheduled out so that The bands would start at the one venue, and they would start at the other venue with, like, say, a half hour gap. So they would overlap a little bit as the night went on, but not very much. So you could just run from door to door to door to see who is playing in the next venue, or to catch most of the set. So you could really catch most of the set of all the bands, which was great if you wanted to do that. The only problem with this, and Tom, you could attest to this you'll see, is
are you gonna say because I'm old?
No, because you're a drinker. It just means if you were going to go into one of the other venues and buy like a tall boy of beer, you can't take it out onto the street and go next door into the other bar with it. So you sort of had to strategically drink. But if that's my main criticism, that's not really
either that or you could not be a win, but just slam it down and go get another one at the next bar.
Well, I mean, that's what you did. But a lot of the bands that came out to this are bands that I've started to consider friends and I got to hang out with, or bands that I had interacted with for a long time online, but never actually met. So it was nice to do that. So the Thursday night, the headliners between the two shows were, Walmart was on the one of them, and I interviewed them on the show here a while ago, but they have a cassette that just came out called Walmart Forever. It's pretty amazing. It is sort of like the best that they've ever sounded on record. So they played just like a really crazy set, and they were preceded by like a bunch of bands that were members of Ottawa's more like crusty hardcore community. So it was kind of like cool to see some of those people play, because I've never have. And then down on the other venue, the Steve Adamic band headlined the second night, and I haven't seen Steve play in 3 or 4 years now, but they just had an album come out on Dirt Nap called Paradise that was really great. And there was a moment after their set where I kind of felt like a dick, because I kind of walked over and I'm like, hey, Steve. And he's like, Adam, hey, I recognize you. And we had this little conversation where, I mean, I don't want to toot our horn for being punk news or anything, but John, this happens where you're like, you meet a band where you've posted some stuff about them and they're really over gracious about it. And then when you really look back, you're like, I didn't do all that much for you ever. Like, you know, I've posted news about your bands or whatever from time to time, but it's not like I've given you like 16 glowing reviews or anything like that. Like, I doubt that in the grand scheme of things, I've contributed all that much to whatever success you're having. So like, stop being so nice. Or is this just me?
No. Yeah. I mean, well, sometimes you're like, oh, you're so awesome. Thank you. And you're like, I just did it. I just did a news article. I didn't really do all that much. You know what I mean? So
that's better than the opposite, which is the entitled artist who feels like you owe them something. You know, I'll take that any day.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's nice to be thanked. What can I say? It's nice to be thanked. So,
So Steve was really, really great, and I was, you know, it was nice to see him and to like, you know, and to just have him be so enthusiastic. And then the guitar player in Steve's band, who my brain did not recognize, who I knew at the time was like, he was a guy wearing like a New York hardcore shirt. Like, I'm blanking on what band it was. One of the famous ones. Short, starts with T.
Terror?
Wasn't Terror. Fuck.
A New York hardcore band, Short, starts with T.
Yeah. Trial? Trut? Judge?
I mean, Judge doesn't start with T, but maybe it was a Judge. Or, I don't know. It was one of those bands.
So was it Trial?
I'm blanking.
Trial from New York?
The answer to this question.
I don't even know if Trial's a real hardcore band. It just sounds like it should be.
No, Trial definitely is a hardcore band.
Here, you know what? I will look at a photo from that night, because it's going to drive me nuts as I'm talking. So anyways, though, so I looked at this guy and he goes, oh, hey, Adam, like, thanks for what you're doing or whatever, right? And I'm all fried at everything at this point in the night, and I'm probably pretty drunk, and I'm just like, yay, thanks, guy, and just kind of like moved on with my life and didn't like say much to him. And I'm like, you know, who was that? And then like it occurred to me later that it was he was wearing a Judge shirt. Never mind. I said,
so I was right.
You were right.
You made fun of me. I was right.
I'm just like, whoever that guy was guitar player guy that was wearing a Judge shirt, whatever. I'm just gonna, you know, and I feel like, you know, I feel like I just sort of blew him off and I didn't mean to. And then I was like, oh, that's Dave Williams from Crusades, who is in like a million bands. And I love Crusades, and Crusades were great. And he has this cool new kind of like new wavy band called Surrender right now, which is totally not the kind of band that you would expect a guy wearing a Judge shirt to make. But in any case, afterwards, I'm like, oh, shit, I'm a dick. So I'm like sending him a message on the internet to be like, hi, I think we met and I totally ignored you and I didn't mean to do that. And again, everyone's super gracious. And it's like, no, not at all. You know, it was nice to meet you. And I was like, all right. Can be nice about it, but I'm pretty sure I was being an asshole there. In any case, that was the first night of it. I got to hang out with my friends in Walmart, and my friends in Death Sticks, and some new friends from other bands afterwards, and just sort of like be around and be a little bit more than just a fly on the wall in these groups of bands, which was nice. Now, by the way, the subtext to all of this is that I abandoned my family and went to Ottawa solo and got myself an Airbnb in some scuzzy basement and, you know, made my children a burden for everyone else to deal with during the time. But, you know, what can you do? So, yeah, this was a 3-day festival. So that was the Thursday night. The Friday night, some hardcore bands from Montreal came up and played. A big hardcore band from Montreal called Cell. A band which is a Turbo Negro style band from Welland, Ontario, called D-Boy played. It was great. The Saturday was sort of like the full day of shows where they were doing all of the kind of like side-by-side things again between those two venues, but they also had some house shows and some basement shows and things like that that were going on. So there is a really great band that sort of has an X-ray specs vibe from Ottawa that I'm sure I've played on this show before called Bonnie Dune, where there's a sax in the band, but they can get really sludgy and just, anyways, they have a house where they live and they had a, like a matinee house show in their basement and you could not fit more than, you know, I think 20 people in this basement really, and probably zero people in this basement if you were trying to follow any kind of health or safety regulation. And it was just wonderful to go into, you know, basically stand next to someone's furnace and watch a band that you've liked for a long time just kind of rock out in what's essentially their practice space. And there was lots of cool stuff that happened that day. A band called BBQT or Barbecue-T or whoever you want to call them from Montreal came, and they had an EP that just came out, and they kind of did their premiere show for that. And they're this sort of wonderful twee sounding super happy pop punk band. I saw John Creedon and the Flying Hellfish play in the basement of that bookstore. I should mention that that Tony, who ran Side by Side, is also the drummer in the Hellfish, so it was cool to see hit them there. And then the big thing from a like from an Ottawa music scene standpoint, and this predates me, is that the whole event sort of ended off with a reunion of a pretty beloved within the city kind of like atmospheric noise rock band called Bondar that hasn't played a show in 5 years, but they got together and do it on that last day. And that was really cool. Now, I'm at this show or I'm at this weekend, and I meet all the people that run, which is a website that is essentially the punk news of the Ottawa music scene, which is called Ottawa Showbox. And they do tons of work for like promoting music from the city and, you know, interviewing bands and doing show listings and all this stuff. So I meet all these guys, and then I realize that, oh, you know, the whole group of them were going to the music festival the next weekend that I was also going to. And not only that, but we were actually all going to the same cottage the one night. Our Stephen McGill, who's a photographer that we run photos for a lot on Bunk News, they have a family cottage sort of out in New Brunswick in that area. And we were all happened to be convening there the night before the festival. So it was like I met all these new friends, and then I went home. And then a week later, I met all those friends again in a different, you know, in a totally different province. And we hung out a second time. So I'm just like, I'm just full of like happy friend shit with all of this. It's been a wonderful, you know, couple weeks of music stuff. Now, the distance between, say, Ottawa and Sackville, if you were to drive in a car, let's see here, what is it? It's about an 11 and a half hour drive between those two places. If you were to go from Toronto to Sackville, which our photographer Steven did in a car full of Toronto people, it is a 15 hour drive. And so Steve did that in a haul, like a single, I'm going to drive out to this place, leave at 5 a.m., get there at 10 in the evening haul. And that is a fucking dumb thing. And I don't know why he does that, but he does it every year. Now, I, like a sensible person, got on an airplane and went on the airplane. It cost a lot more, but I didn't have to drive for 15 hours. So I'm okay with that life choice. This is my second year going to Sappy Fest. So this is a music festival that is in downtown Sackville, New Brunswick. Sackville is a town of 5,000 people. And it is a town with a university in it that is not populated very much at all during the summer. So there are probably far less than 5,000 people there at this point in the year. The whole reason it exists is, there was a record label that was run out of the area, called Sappy Records back in the day. One of the bands that was not from Sackville directly, but from Moncton, which is right next to Sackville, was a band that had a little bit of fame in the 90s as being like the first Canadian band ever signed to Sub Pop. So they were called Eric's Trip, like after the Sonic Youth song. And one of the members of Eric's Trip was a singer-songwriter named Julie Duaron. So Julie ran Sappy Records for a number of years. Sappy Fest started off as basically, you know, bands playing, you know, house parties for the various Sappy Records people in town. And it's grown over the years to be a strange animal within Canadian music, which is, it is probably one of the most notable and artistically prestigious music festivals in Canada. And I say that and it sounds douchey, and that's not what I meant it to be. But it's one that, you know, bands that are serious about being bands and who really want to play for, I don't know, the movers and shakers of the Canadian music world tend to play at some point in their career. But it's all done without some sort of there's no industry smear on it, right? Like I'm just listening to how I described it, and that makes it sound like it's some sort of Coachella thing, but it's not. It's a tiny festival in a tiny town. There's probably, you know, they probably sell, I don't know, like somewhere between 800 and 2,000 tickets maybe for this thing. But, you know, the stages are small. The bands are all kind of milling around in the crowd in between the stages. There's not much separation between anything. It partly maintains its size because it is, well, I mean, it's smartly programmed so that they try not to bring in bands that are too big, but bands that are sort of on the cusp of being interesting, or bands that are from, you know, they try not to repeat a band year on year, but they'll keep bringing back bands from the same family of artists. So, you know, some guy they'll play one year and then he'll have a different band that he's formed and he'll come back the next, and it builds this little community about it. But also Sackville's in the middle of fucking nowhere. So, you know, it doesn't have the same, the same ability to draw a whole ton of people and make it something it's not. And the size of something like Sappy is what makes it great. So they go and they set up their main stage in like the middle of the downtown street in this tiny little town. And while the band's on stage there, you can go to the little tiny town pub that is basically right next to where the stage is, and get a drink and sit on one of these like two picnic tables that are there, and, you know, hang out with your friends and listen to the band. And, you know, if there was more people there, you couldn't do that because those two picnic tables would not facilitate them. But they're just, it's big enough that it it draws out interesting acts, but it's like not, it's like purposefully not bigger than that. And however they maintain that, whatever voodoo they do to achieve that is just, it's pretty nuts. It's pretty amazing. It makes the whole thing pretty special from the community standpoint that's doing it. So the artists that are playing this thing are all over the place, like genre wise, you know, up and down different and, atypical from just one to the other that's playing. So the first night of this thing, a few highlights from it for me at least were, so there's a band right now that's been nominated for the Polaris Prize this year called Fetnat, FET.NAT. Fetnat is a band out of Hull, Quebec that basically sounds like the French Canadian Minutemen. They're referred to a lot of the times as a punk jazz band, which doesn't make a whole ton of sense, except that there's sort of a lot of discordant weirdness that's happening in the songs. The songs are very bass heavy, and there's just sort of like wacky, skronky saxophone happening throughout. I'm going to play a Fetnat song later just to make people angry, but they are, they're super weird and super aggressive in the way that their frontman approaches the crowd. And he's constantly holding up signs above his head that have various, strange slogans and things half in English and half in French on them. And it's super entertaining. Fetnat is not the kind of band I would expect to ever say be nominated for something like Polaris, because they're kind of unlistenable unless you're into noise music. But here we are. They are one of these rising stars. This really cool rock band from St. John called Motherhood played, genres all over the place with what they're doing. But the whole thing was just excellently done. The headliner on the first night was an indigenous hip hop duo from out in the Vancouver area called Snotty Nose Rez Kids that are probably one of the biggest hip hop acts in Canada right now. And one that is like really aggressively singing about the issues that the indigenous community has to deal with up here. They're like super anti-pipeline, you know, out kind of like fighting with what the oil industry is trying to do in Canada. So as far as like politically active protest music, they're right up at the top of what's going on in the country right now. A band played in one of the Legion halls after that called Delilah, which is a Toronto-based art rock band that kind of has like a, they kind of sound like Slint. Or if you're into, say, there's a band I played in the podcast a few weeks ago called Uranium Club from, where's the Uranium Club from? Minnesota, Michigan, somewhere out there. Minneapolis.
I just saw Uranium Club. Uranium Club is cool.
Uranium Club is cool. They kind of have that vibe to it where it's like almost slightly spoken, and then there's just like a lot of like weird Devo-y noises happening at the same time. But Delilah does it with this sort of mean, almost like German austerity to it. They're a really neat live band to see. A second night of this festival, a whole bunch of cool bands that to me are really like canonical sappy style bands played. The headliner was this singer-songwriter that does these really super earnest rock songs called Shotgun Jimmy. The reunited sort of beloved indie rock band from Vancouver called Apollo Ghosts got together and played it. On the punk standpoint from that night, there were two that I thought were really, really interesting and really fun. There's a band called Lo Siento they're singing entirely in Spanish. Forget which country their lead singer is originally from, somewhere in South America. But they do pop punk music that's entirely in Spanish, and they happen to be from St. John's, Newfoundland, which is about the least Spanish place on earth. So they were super fun and super propulsive. But then that night at, you know, 1 a.m. in one of the little bars that was on this street, there's a band from Montreal called Barnacle. And I cannot remember if I played a Barnacle song on this show before, but Barnacle, but if not, I will at some point in the next 2 weeks. Barnacle is like a scuzzy four-piece sort of proto-punk sounding you know, punk band, but they sing entirely about the sea or entirely about, like, I don't know, like beach and water related things, but not in a way that is like, there's been this trend of like beach punk sounding bands. Like, you know, you've heard these, right? Over the past few years where like all these bands are coming out and they're working all of these, you know, these like, or like these like late 50s kind of like pop vibes into what they're doing. This is not that at all. This is, I guess, like as aquatic as, say, like, what's the Sex Pistols song? Is it Submarine?
What's that? Submission. Submission.
Yeah, it is Submission. Sorry.
Submission.
Yeah. Right. So, but you're a guest. So you know how in Submission there's some amount of reverb that's happening that like gives it this, you know, aquatic underwaterness to it. This is basically that sound as a hardcore band, and singing, you know, bizarrely about SpongeBob SquarePants or whatever they happen to work into their music. Barnacle is super fun. They're super weird. I will play them at some point because they're just the kind of thing that's up my alley right now. The last day of the event had all kinds of cool stuff too. There's a band called Whoopso, WHOOP-SZO, that comes out of Guelph, Ontario. Indigenous rock band where they play, like, on record, they have all kinds of kind of crazy experimentalism, but then just live, they're just like this loud as fuck hard rock act. And they just kicked my ass. Like, Whoopso was great. The headliner on the final night was one of the rising stars of like the Canadian rap scene right now, which is a woman from Brampton, Ontario, named Javia Mighty. She's a part of a trio called The Sorority that's been making a lot of stuff out of Toronto right now. But Javia played last on the Big Bridge Street stage that last night, and she just, you know, was totally amazing and completely kicked my ass. And partly why I like this festival so much is it gets me out and in front of a lot of these acts that I would not have normally gone out of my way to see. So like, I'm, you know, I like hip hop, but I like hip hop in sort of this lame academic way where I can say I like hip hop, which to say I don't dislike hip hop, but I don't really know anything about it, which is really the more truth for me outside of John's wonderful
five picks
that he's given me there. Right. So, you know, would I have gone out and, you know, sought out and seen, you know, Javia Mighty or someone like Snotty Nose Res Kids or one of these kind of acts play otherwise if they weren't playing Sappy? Not necessarily, but that's part of why I like going to this festival. Is like, I trust the curation of it, where like we bought tickets for this year's fest without knowing anyone that was booked. It was more that we're like, we love that town. We love going there. We love hanging out at that little street side bar on the picnic tables and just, you know, drinking away the Sunday afternoon as bands of all sorts play. And, you know, we'll wait and see who gets booked, and, you know, we'll enjoy it one way or the other. And it is a different way than I usually interact with things. Like, you know, if you were to say, yeah, you're going to Riot Fest next year or whatever, I'd be like, well, I don't know. It depends who's playing Riot Fest next year. But if you're like, are you going to Sappy next year? I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to Sappy. Like, I'll buy the ticket now. So it just is one of those things. So I'm full of love right now, John. I've had all kinds of lovely experiences. I feel like in the past 2 weeks, I've seen like easily 60 different bands play in different contexts, probably more. So that's way more music consumption than I get at any one time ever. So I'm cool. I'm good.
Adam, I'm happy you had a good time, and I'm happy you're out there promoting the good word for Canadian punk music.
I am trying.
And Canadian all kinds of music.
Canadian True. All kinds of music. There's not enough of us up here that we can be very genre specific. We just kind of all, everybody's got to get in the Everyone is going to get in the tent. But it's funny though, because Side by Side was like almost exclusively a punk and hardcore festival. Sappy is, you know, I mean, you could kind of squint and say it's an indie rock festival, but really it was just sort of, again, all over the place, you know, act wise. But I saw a ton of the same people at the one event and at the other event, and they're like 15 hours away from each other. And that's just Canada. That's just like there's a lot of fucking space up here and not a lot of people in it. So you just sort of get that. It's a strange phenomenon. So anywho, I'm going to play a song before we come back and I guess wrap this sucker up. So I'm going to play a song from Fetnat. So this is not from the newly nominated Polaris nominated record that they had that just came out, because that record is a little bit more, electronic, a little bit more of like a studio synth based project. I want to play Fetnat where they're just being really fucking weird and aggressive. And you know, I'm curious who's going to turn off the podcast during this. So this is from a two song single that they had out in, I think, 2017 called Goaler, G-O-A-L-E-R. I'm sure that there is a more French way to pronounce that than I am pronouncing it, but I don't pretend to speak French at all. So this song is called Trust Cops. And then there's a little trademark next to the word cops. So it's called Trust Cops. It is from the Goaler single that Fetnat released in 2017. And it's super wacky. So buckle up. All right, we're back. I had a time. John had time. Tom, we haven't given you a lot of chance to talk about shit. I don't know. What do you want? You got the floor.
Well, I had some exciting times too. First, I went and I bought some 2x4s.
Nice.
Like I measured up the space and then I bought a bunch of 2x4s. And I'm constructing some walls. And then last Saturday, Mrs. Traum and I had a hot date where we went out and got some new carpet for the basement.
Nice.
I did go see COC and Crowbar. That was sort of fun. My daughter, Alex, who's been a way off peripheral character occasionally on this podcast and at Pug News, is starting college in the fall, and she's going to stay at home for a couple of years. So I'm building her room in the basement. So that's my life.
Can we talk about buying 2x4s for a minute?
I mean, that's exciting stuff. What's that, Adam?
I hope Tom has like a bunch of college parties at his house, and like Tom comes down.
Are you familiar with a little movie called Back to School?
I am,
with Rodney Dangerfield, because I'm going to make that look like a documentary.
So Tom, when you're buying 2x4s, are you the kind of person that will pick up each board and eyeball it on an angle to the ground to make sure it is straight and true and not warped, or will you just pick them up and load them on a cart?
No, I will in fact look at each one individually. Yeah. I have my own system. I don't know about your look at the ground system, but I do. I look at everyone.
You are a man of my own heart in this case, because my father has trained me that if you just go into the store and you just buy wood and take it home, you are an idiot. You have to stand around and fuck with the pile for.
Where do you buy wood, Adam? You got like Lowe's or Home Depot or Menards or what?
We have Lowe's and we have Home Depot. I happen to live close to a big Lowe's now, so that is our place for which to buy lumber for our various projects. So sometimes I wonder when I'm out there, you know, eyeballing boards, and I'm like, am I making everyone's life difficult? Is this a thing people do in the real world, or is this just something my dad?
But is there anything greater, Adam, than building something with your own two hands and casting your entire household into a state of hellish havoc for 2 weeks while you do that?
I don't profess to have any particular skill, but I do profess to have cast household into hellish havoc tendencies. So yes.
If you want to expose any cracks you may have in your marriage, take on a building project with your wife. It's the ultimate for purging the soul. But nah, it'll be all right. But no, I haven't been to any festivals. I haven't. It's been, you know, living in a cold weather state. As I do, summer shows are usually pretty busy, and like winter is pretty cold. Like January and February is a dead zone, but it has been a pretty slow summer. I don't know if it's just because I'm getting old. I don't know who any of the bands are anymore, or if it's just a cyclical thing, or I just am too picky or what. But yeah, I have not been going to a ton of shows.
Well, Tom, you could have come to summer story.
I seriously considered it. But the issue I've been having is I've not been having a good balance. Life is all about the balance. And quite honestly, my family life balance has been out of whack because I've been doing too much me stuff and not doing enough family stuff. So that's why I was unable to make it to Philadelphia. One of these years, John, one of these years.
It's always next year, Tom. It's always
exactly.
Next year.
I'm hoping 1 year you and I can do some kind of a ridiculous routine.
Me too.
and all that pipe hitting that we plan to do. Taking back your turf and whatnot.
Well, John seems to have gotten himself into enough potential trouble with this podcast. So
if John disappears, I know where we're looking at him. You and I will have to go to New York to investigate. And then we'll have to avenge him.
Avenge me.
I mean, I couldn't live with myself if we didn't avenge him.
Yeah, I figure avenging John Gentile is just one of the things that I'm going to eventually have, you know, inevitably my life will take that turn. All right. So I guess that is.
It's just a matter of time.
I think that's it. We can all go to bed now.
Next week I'm going to have to take up a lot more space. I'm going to have to do some real storytelling, even if it's wildly inaccurate and mostly made up.
Is that what this podcast is?
Yeah. When the best, if the best thing I can make up is going to buy 2x4s, then, and some new carpet, then I don't know. Next week, John, we'll regale them with our tales of breaking promoters' knees with lead pipes.